Welcome to the Former Fat Friend podcast. I'm Casey.
I'm Lisa.
I'm Allie. And together we've lost over 370 pounds.
We all know what it's like to be the fat friend. And now we are sharing the ins and outs of our weight loss journeys.
Welcome back. This week we are talking about the doctor in the room.
We are. Casey, this is your week. This is all about you,
girl. We should clarify for our listeners that I am, in fact, not a doctor.
Well, she is a doctor. She has a PhD.
You're not a medical doctor.
Not a medical doctor.
Is that like PH fat?
Right. Fat with a PH. Yeah, no. She's a doctor, and we rely on her for everything. That's
absolutely not true.
And now we all get to hear all about her.
So, Casey, I feel like a lot of people feel like they know you. What's your story?
Give us the highlights on you. Give us the stats.
Yeah. So I had gastric sleeve surgery in November of 2021. So I'm about 2.5 years post-op. My heaviest weight at the time of surgery was 234 pounds. I have lost around 105 pounds. So I'm now about 128, 129 pounds. And I have been maintaining that for about over a year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's exciting.
That's crazy.
Very exciting.
Were you always a bigger person? Like, were you a bigger child?
Yeah. So I definitely struggled with my weight my whole life. I think from a pretty early age, I kind of recognized that I was a bigger kid than everybody else. My mom has always struggled with her weight as well. So I have very vivid memories of like going to Jenny Craig with her as a kid. But I think I was pretty lucky in that my parents did not instill in me a lot of like disordered eating things around food. So they never told me to go on a diet. They never told me to not eat something or that foods were good or bad. That just wasn't really part of my childhood growing up. So while I recognized that I was definitely overweight, I never had a thought of like, I need to do something about this.
Well, what about the fact that your mom was doing something about it? Like, do you recall any conversations had with her around that?
Not really until high school. So in high school, I asked to go to Weight Watchers with my mom. That was the first time that I kind of made the decision of like, I want to do something about this. And I knew because I had seen her do every diet under the sun and she was doing Weight Watchers at the time. I said, I want to go with you. But as a young child, no, I really don't remember having any conversations with her around diets or weight loss or anything like that. It really wasn't until I was in high school that I kind of said, I want to do something about this.
Did you know that you were a bigger kid and you didn't know or want to do anything about it yet? Or you didn't know how?
That's a good question.
Or just didn't register that you should? Or
I think maybe a little bit of both. I think it didn't necessarily register that I should do something. And I also didn't know what I would do. I was a kid. I was, like 10 years old? How do you? You don't really know about that kind of stuff. And to my parents' credit, I really genuinely think that they did a very good job of sheltering me from a lot of the issues that can arise in childhood related to food and eating and things like that. And I know, Lisa, we've talked about this before where your mom would tell you, like, finish your plate.
Yeah.
That was never something that I heard. I never heard, oh, that food is bad for you. Don't eat that or eat this good food. It was just very neutral for me, which I think was a very positive thing.
That's such a rare thing for the 90s, too.
Yeah. It really is, especially with a parent that was so actively dieting.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have any memories of her being unhappy with her body or being restrictive or having success with weight loss? Like, was it just kind of a chronic thing?
She was much more of a yo-yo dieter. So certainly I have more recent memories of her being more restrictive. I think when I was in maybe college, she did a medical weight loss type of program and was pretty restrictive and, you know, barely eating anything. But as a young child, no, I really don't have those memories. She cooked us dinner every night. We all ate dinner as a family. Yeah, it was just a very like normal relationship with food type of setting.
So that's so interesting to me because I think I put so much stock in the way I currently talk about food and the way I like present food and dieting to my children. I feel like it matters so much. And I think I put a lot of like my own issues on the fact that I watch dieting. But it's almost like freeing to hear from someone that like that wasn't really a thing for you and that your parents didn't like do this to you.
Yeah.
Because I worry about that so much, like putting that on them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for a lot of people, there are things that happen that are instilled in you as a very young child of like, this is bad food, you shouldn't eat it. And so then you go eat it in the closet so that no one can see you eating
it. For sure.
So that definitely is a real thing. And I think the fact that you're even aware of it is probably setting up your kids for success much more than, you know, I don't think it's to say that those are bad parents. I don't think people knew better.
You do, yeah. What do we say? You do the best you can with what you have.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
You know. Yeah, you don't know what you don't know.
So, okay, you said Weight Watchers was the first time you tried to take it into your own hands?
Yeah, I was a sophomore in high school. I had just switched to a new high school. I was doing very poorly at a public school. And so I switched to a private school, started doing a lot better just academically and socially. And I think at that time was just like, I'm ready to like do something about this. I can remember going to my sister's high school graduation. She's two grades ahead of me. And I needed to buy a new pair of shorts. And I had to buy a size 18 Tommy Hilfiger white shorts. And that was like, that I think was the moment I was like, oh, this is like, I need to do something about this. And that's when I said to my mom, I want to go to Weight Watchers with you. So I did that. I lost 55 pounds. I can remember going on a cruise that summer with my family, and it was the first time I had ever worn a bikini in public. And there's this picture in a scrapbook of me, and it was this little yellow bikini, and I like felt so good. And it was the first time I'd ever really lost weight in my life. And it kind of came pretty easy that first time. And then I went to college.
Yeah. You were the Yoplait commercial. She wore itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini. No?
Yeah.
Yoplait, the yogurt, they had like a, you eat the yogurt and you get skinny and then you can wear a yellow bikini.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's literally what
honestly,
I thought of
I
when you were like,
couldn't I wear a yellow bikini.
Yeah, no, I just tried one on from Target and it's going back. It's not a thing for me.
Bummer. And I will say, I think I still felt bigger than everyone. I actually have a very vivid memory of going to college. I went from a really tiny high school. I had 36 kids in my graduating class. And I went to Florida State, which is a school of 40,000. I went through sorority recruitment. And I was completely overwhelmed at just the number of people there. But I can remember sitting in this one house during one of the recruitment rounds and looking around at the girls and finding a girl that was a bigger girl and saying, oh, good. Okay, they have bigger girls here. Like, I could fit in to this house. And I wasn't. I think I wore maybe a size 12 at that time. So I wasn't even that big. But like in my mind, I had just been big my whole life. So I still really thought of myself as being a big girl. And I was just searching for like those people that I could connect with and be like, okay, I could fit in here. Because like, it's not all like skinny, gorgeous, pretty girls.
I think we've all done that.
Of course we have.
Yeah. Did you actually join a sorority?
I did. Yeah. I joined that sorority where I found the girl that I related to in body size, actually.
We're enemies now.
Why?
I'm just joking. We're not.
We don't like sororities. It was the best thing I could have ever done.
No, it's good. I think it's good. My sister did it when she stopped swimming. My little sister only swam for a couple years. And when she stopped, she joined a sorority. But when you're an athlete, that's like a thing you don't do.
Well, it's
like
it's
you
also,
say, like you paid for your friends and we got
honestly,
paid for ours.
I didn't join a sorority. I don't even think it was in the realm of possibility because of my size. Mm. I was like, oh no, sorority girls don't look like me. That's not even something I'm going to consider.
Yeah, I think that was why I was like, every time I went into a house, I was looking for someone that looked like me just to confirm that like, yes, I can fit in here. Like, I'm okay.
So you joined the sorority. Mm-hmm. And where did health and wellness factor in or did it?
It didn't really. I mean, I was thrown into this new world where it was socials every week and formals and semi-formals and drinking a lot. And I never went to the gym. I never thought about health and wellness. And not surprisingly, those 50 pounds came right back on and then some. I spent a lot of college trying to diet, kind of generally unsuccessfully. I remember doing Weight Watchers again. That was like the first time I gained weight. I think I had gotten up back up to like 190 and I was like, oh, I should go back to Weight Watchers. And I never really lost that much weight again. I think after I had regained the weight, I didn't know how to address it. And so I ended up really turning into what was essentially an eating disorder where I would eat and then throw up after everything that I ate because I didn't know how else to control it. And I never was, you know, formally diagnosed with anything and never saw a therapist. Unfortunately, that was something that I was able to work through and it's no longer an issue and hasn't been for a very long time. But I can actually remember being out at a restaurant with a bunch of friends and excusing myself to go to the bathroom there so that I could throw up what I had just eaten. And I think that was like the turning point in my head of this is not okay. This is now not something that you're doing in the privacy of your own home. Like this is
starting to like affect other parts of your life. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that was kind of where it stopped, thankfully. And I did not weigh that much. I think I was about 165 pounds at the height of that disordered eating. And I remember thinking I was massive. I thought I was the biggest person in college. Like I could have
college
in Florida.
In
yeah.
You could have told me I was the largest person at Florida State University and I would have said, you're right, I am.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy how, you know, looking back now at those photos and knowing what I weighed then, I wasn't even close to being big, but the way your brain kind of tricks you is just, it's rough.
We never know when we're in it, right? I feel like everybody, every female on the planet looks at a picture at some point in their life and it's like, God, I thought I was fat then and what I would give to look like that right now. Like,
right. Yeah. I want to point out to you what you said about, like, I felt like I was the biggest person in college, period, any college. Like, I think that goes to show the isolating nature of dealing with a weight problem or a body image problem or whatever, because like that's like why we're doing this, right? Mm-hmm. Because you say that and it's like we're laughing, but like we've literally all felt like we're the biggest person in the room, in the college, like whatever it is, at work. And in some of those places I have been, but probably not in college, right? Like there's a football team.
Yeah. You know, like yeah. And I do think that being in a sorority, the stereotypes are true. There are mostly very thin, very beautiful women in sororities. Yeah. And that was true of mine. And it was true of all of Greek life at Florida State. So my frame of reference was that. And that's what I was constantly comparing myself to. Now I look back at those photos from a very different perspective. I have a broader sense of the world. And I can say, yeah, of course I wasn't the biggest person. But in my tiny little world in college, I was. And that was really difficult to deal with.
So we joke about you being a doctor, but obviously after undergrad, you continued school. Did you work right away or how did that transition go?
Yeah, so I actually moved to New York City right after college and I spent 2 years there and then moved back to Florida and started grad school. I got my PhD, so I did 6 years of grad school.
Whew.
And that's really where my weight started to become more of an issue. So I didn't gain weight rapidly, but I gained 10 to 15 pounds every single one of those 6 years of grad school. And by the end of grad school, I was at my heaviest weight of, you know, almost 240 pounds. And I think that was a combination of stress, being kind of a broke grad student, not having money for healthy foods and things like that. And just, I don't know, maybe age playing a factor.
Were you aware of it, the weight gain each year?
Oh, yeah. I tried crazy things to lose weight. In grad school, I went on an HCG diet. Have you ever heard of this?
Yes.
I just heard of this for the first time like 2 days ago. I don't know what it is.
So I don't even know what HCG stands for, but it's some hormone that your body produces when you're pregnant.
That's the first test they give you. HCG levels are like, yeah.
So okay. I went to this clinic. They sent me home with shots. I had to give myself a shot. I think it was like every 3 days. And then you're on this extremely restrictive diet of like 500 calories a day.
Wild.
And the HCG is
supposed
to... So
what does the shot do? I mean, if you're on 500 calories a day...
Well, I think it's like, an appetite suppressant. I think
it's kind of like the phentermine. It's supposed to suppress your appetite a bit. So yeah, that was crazy. I tried the Master Cleanse. Did you guys ever do that?
Was that like the lemon and cayenne pepper?
Yeah, the lemon, the cayenne pepper. I did that. I remember doing Whole30 and I did it over Thanksgiving. And I was so strict about it that I literally stuck to it on Thanksgiving. I remember making a sweet potato casserole of sorts that was Whole30 appropriate and bringing that for Thanksgiving. And, you know, all of those things I would lose a little bit of weight. I think when I did Whole30 for that month, I lost about 10 pounds. Mm-hmm. And within, no joke, like 3 or 4 days, that 10 pounds was right back on.
Yeah.
Every time. And I never lost a significant amount of weight after that first attempt in high school where I lost 50 pounds. I never lost more than 10, 15 pounds ever.
So when did bariatric surgery come on the radar for you, or was it a long time after that?
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting because I think, you know, I had spent many, many years being obese, being at that heavy weight of like 220 to 230. But I was also very active. I played volleyball. I felt like I was generally an active person. And so I always kind of had this thought in my head of like, I really don't want to be fat. I would really love to lose weight. I'm trying all the time to lose weight. I'm doing everything I can think of to lose weight. It's not working. But also like, it's okay because I'm healthy. Like I'm a healthy fat person.
Yeah. My sister and I used to say we were fatletic.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I had two sides of my brain of like, I desperately want to lose weight, but also like, I'm healthy, so I'm okay. And then I think it was start of 2020, I decided like, okay, I'm going to go back on Weight Watchers. I'm really going to do it this time. Fun fact, that's how my Instagram account originally started. It was KC_WW for Weight Watchers. Uh-huh. And I found all these Weight Watchers people and I followed them and I would post my daily points and I would post my weigh-ins there. And I was doing pretty well on Weight Watchers. I think I lost about 15 pounds, which was the most I had lost in quite a while. And I was feeling good. And then COVID happened. And the world shut down. All of those like foods that I had gotten used to eating, my staple foods, you couldn't find anymore because grocery stores were out of stock of everything. And so then that year, it really, I think my weight kind of spiraled a bit and I just felt really, really out of control. And then in 2021, I had started a new job. I switched insurance and I made an appointment with my primary care doctor just for like a general checkup. And she had recommended doing blood work. And my blood work came back that I was pre-diabetic. And that was the first time that I felt like, okay, wait, I'm not a healthy fat person. This is actually a problem because now I have a real thing that's an issue. And so that was pretty scary for me. So my doctor, of course, as so many of them do, said, yeah, you should really try diet and exercise.
Oh, should I?
To get this
what a revelation.
Control. Yeah.
Let's move more.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Works for everybody.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, all right, I guess I have to try. I ended up finding a medical clinic again and I went on phentermine and I was so hopeful. I lost a little bit of weight and about 2 weeks into taking the phentermine, the effects just essentially stopped. I had no more appetite suppression. I stopped losing weight. It was just not working anymore. And I think at that point, I reached a kind of a point of resignation of myself. Like, I'm just going to be fat forever. This just is what it is. And it definitely wasn't acceptance. I never felt okay with that. It wasn't like, I'm fat and I'm okay. I feel good. I'm going to just live life. It was like defeat and disappointment, but just like, this is what it is. And I think a big thing for me, and I don't know if this will make sense, but like, I knew that experiencing life in a smaller body had to be different than life that I had experienced. And I felt so sad that I was never going to know what that felt like. I think that was like the most disappointing part was I know life has got to be easier. And I
that's so real. Sorry, I'm like going to cry. That's the realest shit I've heard ever. Because we know all of the things that are harder for us that other people don't even think about. And we know that they're because of our weight. And it's just the absence of certain things.
Yeah. So actually that year, I had a kind of a big newer friend group that had decided to go on a trip to the Bahamas. It was about 10 people, guys and girls. And I was invited to go. And my first reaction was, I wanted to say no, because I knew I was going to have to be in a bathing suit around these people. I didn't know them that well. There were going to be guys there, which is like just so embarrassing.
Horrifying, yeah.
But I had gotten to that point of like resignation of like, this is just is what it is. And I had told myself, like, I'm going to try to just live life anyway and just do the things. And so I said yes. And I went on the trip. And I can remember, oh man, I spent so much time and mental energy trying to find the right clothes for that trip, trying to find bathing suits that flattered me, trying to find the right cover-up so that like when I was at the pool, what am I going to put on so you don't see my legs? And I remember we had to buy, we needed one fancy outfit for a nice dinner out at like the Four Seasons, I think. I didn't have anything. So I ordered this jumpsuit. It was a Vince Camuto jumpsuit, a black jumpsuit. It was really pretty, but I needed it in a size 18. And I was so embarrassed and so worried that someone on that trip, one of those 10 people, maybe my roommate, was going to see the size tag of it, that I cut out the size 18 size tag, because I would have been mortified if anyone knew that I wore a size 18, which is crazy when you think about it, because they have eyes. Like, they know what
they
look
like. Oh, they
can
see your body. I'm like, what do you mean? They have eyes, but you cut the tag out. They can't see anything.
You've got them fooled.
I used to do the same thing. I didn't cut my tags out, but I would hide them. I would strategically, the way that I would fold if I was rooming or if I was shopping with a friend, I would like make sure they couldn't see what size I was grabbing. But you're right. Like, yeah, they have eyes.
Yeah. So went through all that. I went on the trip. It was a good trip, but so much of it was hard. There was one time we were walking really far from, you know, it's a small island and some people were in golf carts and I ended up walking and I was struggling so bad with walking and I was just, but like so embarrassed and not wanting anyone to know that I was struggling. So like forcing myself to keep up. This was probably the most embarrassing. We did this. Have you ever seen those like water, like things that you climb up and slide down in the water, those like water play areas that they'll set up sometimes? Every single person was able to physically get themselves up onto those things. And I could not pull myself up out of the water onto this thing. Like I gave up on so many of them because I just couldn't do it. And then finally, one of my friends who was very kind, came behind me and sort of like boosted me up on one of them so that I could actually get up and do it. But man, I just remember that being like, I can't believe I'm the only one here who can't do this. This is really, really embarrassing.
Yeah, it's a horrible feeling.
Yeah. And so I was proud of myself for going, because that was something I don't think I would have done before. And I was like, okay, like you put yourself out there, you did this thing that was hard, but it was so difficult. It was just so difficult.
Yeah.
So this is something that I feel like you get a lot of attention for on social media, but you didn't look like me beforehand, right? How did you find that bariatric surgery was an option for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually found out from TikTok.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I just learned that right now.
Yeah. So I was scrolling TikTok and I came across this girl. Her name is Haley. I forget her last name, but she's wonderful. And she was talking about how she had gastric sleeve surgery and she was showing her before and afters. And I was like, wait a second, she looks like me in the before. And it was like this light bulb went off. I had no idea. I actually had two family members that had gastric bypass surgery. They were the kind of person you would think about having bariatric surgery. Right. So it wasn't like I had never heard about it. I just never.
It was for those people again.
Yeah. It never even crossed my mind that that was an option. And it was also never told to me as an option from any medical professional ever. So yeah, I went deep in a rabbit hole on TikTok of finding these what people call low BMI bariatric patients. My BMI was 37 for the record at the time, which is obese. But for bariatric surgery patients, it's a little bit on the lower side. And so I just started finding all of these different TikTok accounts of people, you know, talking about their experience having bariatric surgery. And I was like, this is what I need to do. And so I asked my primary care doctor for a referral to a bariatric surgeon. He said, I don't think you qualify, but okay. And I was like, well, you told me to diet and exercise, so you don't know anything. So I asked for a referral, got that referral. And from there, I started the process of my insurance. So they told me I did not qualify based on BMI alone and that I needed to have a comorbid condition. My prediabetes was not considered severe enough to be a comorbid condition. So they had me do a sleep study to see if I had sleep apnea. I did not. And so at that point, they basically said, you either need to gain 30 pounds or you need to wait for your prediabetes to become full-blown diabetes. If one of those two things happens, we'll cover you for surgery. And if not, we won't.
Honestly, don't tempt me with a good time.
And I was just like, that's crazy. Like,
yeah,
that's
is crazy. Wild. Like, hey, I'm trying to do something that's going to make sure those things don't happen, but you won't help me until those things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was listening to something recently where they were talking about the rigidity of like insurance rules and with bariatric surgery. And it's so disappointing because it's like people who are, like you said, you're at your wit's end and you had kind of given up and then you find like a little bit of light to hold on to. It's like squashed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was pretty set at that time. Like I said, I am a doctor. So I do research. So I went into this very informed. And so I was not giving up that easily. So I at that point said, all right, I'm going to look into self-pay options. And so I did some research on bariatric surgeons in the DC area, found one that looked great. And it was one of the most transformative appointments of my entire life. And I did not have surgery with this man, keep in mind. But just this one appointment was just completely changed the trajectory of what happened next and also how I thought about myself and how I thought about obesity. So two things happened. One, he said, the chances of you losing weight on your own are basically slim to none, that the deck is completely stacked against you. And that, you know, if you're talking about someone who starts eating out all the time and gains 20 pounds, yeah, that's one thing. That's something diet and exercise can address. But when you've been chronically overweight or obese for your entire life, that is a chronic disease that requires medical intervention. And he basically said, it's not your fault that you haven't been able to lose weight. And it was the first time that anyone had ever told me that. And it felt so validating to hear that from an expert who knew what they were talking about, that like, this isn't your fault. And it's not because you haven't tried hard. Because I remember him saying like, I know you've probably tried harder than anybody else to lose this weight. It's not your fault that you haven't been able to do it.
What a breath of fresh air.
That's really so impactful. Yeah. I was listening to a podcast today and they said obesity is a disease, not a decision. And yeah, I love that so much. Like, yeah, it's not a choice. We are probably working harder than everybody else.
Like we also have eyes.
Yeah.
Right. We're aware of what's going on.
Yeah. 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 And then the other thing, you know, I think there was this tiny little piece in the back of my mind that said, if my insurance won't cover it, am I actually a good candidate for it? Because I was on the lower BMI end of bariatric patients. My insurance said no. And so what he told me in that appointment was that insurance requirements were based on an NIH clinical trial from the 90s when it was only gastric bypass and it was open surgery. And that things have changed drastically since then, that it is significantly safer. It's safer than having your gallbladder removed. Mm-hmm. And he said, someone like me is actually a perfect candidate for bariatric surgery because you're much more likely to completely reverse the obesity-related conditions that you have, like prediabetes. You're much more likely to reach a normal weight. We know that bariatric surgery doesn't result in complete weight loss. It's 60 to 70% on average. And so if you imagine that 60 to 70% on someone who's 600 pounds, you're going to be significantly healthier than when you started, but you're not going to be at a normal weight. Whereas someone going in with a lower BMI, that 60 to 70% actually gets you into that normal weight range.
And that percentage, that's for sleeve, right? It's a little different for bypass.
That's right. That's for sleeve. And I mean, you know how averages work. That means that there are people who lose less and people who lose more. Sure. And so there's a lot of variability there.
She's a doctor.
I know. So I think that was just such an impactful single consultation that I had with this person. And then I got the price and it was $33,000 to pay out of pocket. And I think for me, it was cost prohibitive at the time, in part because, you know, I went to grad school for 6 years and then I did a postdoc for 2 years. So I had only been working in a real job for 2 years at that point. Like, so I didn't have tons of excess money and savings to rely on. And then I also think, if I'm being honest, there was this huge fear of failure. And I thought, if I spend $30,000 and I don't lose weight, like,
it's over.
It's over. Yeah. Like, I don't know how I would like come back from that, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
So then that was like devastating because it was like, all right, I had this beacon of hope of, I think this is what I need. I think this is the thing that I've been needing my whole life and I never knew existed until right now. And now I can't do it. And then social media to the rescue again. Mm-hmm. I heard about gastric bypass and gastric sleeve surgery, bariatric surgery in Mexico, medical tourism, and that a lot of people went there and that it was a much more affordable option. At first, I thought it sounded crazy, but as I do, being the doctor that I am, I did a boatload of research and ultimately ended up finding a fantastic physician down there and had gastric sleeve surgery in Mexico for about $8,000, which was a very significant difference from what it was here.
So can you, I'm really curious to hear, because I'm sure that there are plenty of people that are hitting a wall there and exploring surgery elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Once you found your physician and move forward, what was kind of that process like, that pre-op and the surgery itself and post-op and recovering and getting back home, like all of that?
Yeah, so I think this is important. And I often don't talk a ton about this on Instagram. And it's not because I am ashamed of the fact that I went to Mexico. It's because I think you have to be really careful and you have to do your own due diligence. And so I think what I would like to say is there are a couple of things that I did well. One was that I made sure my insurance would cover any life-threatening complications if they arose when I came back. I think that was pretty important for me.
That's so smart. I wouldn't have even considered that.
Yeah. So, you know, I called and they said, you know, we won't cover routine follow-up care. We won't pay for you to go see a bariatric surgeon for post-op visits. But if you develop a leak or gastroparesis or anything like that, that would be covered because that would be considered a life-threatening complication. So that was like, okay, at least I'm not going to go bankrupt from this if something goes wrong. And then the second thing was that I realized that I was not going to have the post-op care and support that I would have had if I did it here and if I had a local team, and that I was going to need to get that in place. So I found a doctor who specialized in obesity medicine who agreed to follow up with me at 3, 6, 12, however many months post-op, agreed to, you know, order my labs and make sure like everything was looking good there. I was prepared to hire a dietitian, which I did eventually. And so I made sure I had all of those pieces of support in place for myself when I got back, because I wasn't going to have that from my surgeon. Because really, once you leave, you know, that that's it, you're done.
What did they give you though? Like in terms of knowing and for your pre-op and those like new weeks post-op, I mean, what kind of resources did they provide?
Yeah. So for the pre-op diet, it was mostly liquids, but also like I could have egg drop soup, I remember, which I logically made no sense to me. I was like, why can I have egg drop soup, but I can't have a hard boiled egg?
I mean, that was me afterward. Okay. The egg drop soup was like, 5 stars.
Yeah. The best thing you've ever had.
Yeah. But it was after surgery. Yeah.
Yeah. That ricotta bake the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
oh,
I've my never God. Had anything.
Talk about a good
life.
Time.
Yeah. So I guess.
Maybe but did they give you guidance like for once you came out in terms of
kind
like.
Of.
Like
kind
I remember.
That doesn't like sound like a yes.
I just remember having a schedule of like how much water to sip, how often, and like.
Not really like that. So the other thing I wanted to say too about the doing your due diligence beforehand is that I did request a consult with my surgeon, which was great. And I think really kind of sealed the deal in terms of my confidence with him. A lot of these surgery centers will expect you to just show up and meet your surgeon on the day of your surgery, which I think is bananas.
Wild.
So you should and you can request a consultation. They may not offer it, but you should. And if they say no, red flag, run, go somewhere else.
I love that. What was that, a virtual consultation?
It was a video consult. Yeah. And it was very much like that first consult with the first bariatric surgeon that I had. It was very validating. You know, he reassured me that I was an excellent candidate for this surgery. He had also done, I think I was his like 17,000th patient. Wow. Or something. Like he had done this for a long time.
I want to back up a second. Did you have a list of like 30 surgeons in Mexico and then you narrowed it down? Like how did you get to him?
Yeah. So there's a Facebook group called I Left My Stomach in Mexico.
Amazing.
And so I learned about this via TikTok, joined the Facebook group, you know, searched there for recommendations. I think I messaged a few people who had surgery with surgeons that I was interested in just to like get their feedback. Once I found a few that seemed good, then I just researched the heck out of them.
Okay. So maybe this is just a me with anxiety thing, but you're on the plane to go to Mexico to have bariatric surgery. What is going through your head?
Yeah, also, who's with you?
Yeah. So, okay. So this is a little crazy and I would not recommend anyone doing what I did. I didn't tell a single person that I was doing any of this.
Not even your parents?
Not my family, not anyone. I didn't tell anyone that I was going through the process here in the US, and I didn't tell anyone that I was going to Mexico. I had a friend who had agreed to come stay at my house to watch my dogs. I told her it was a work trip. And as I'm driving to the airport to fly, I flew into San Antonio, and then you fly into San Antonio, stay a night there, and then they pick you up the next morning and drive you across the border, which is about a 2-hour drive actually from San Antonio. So I'm driving to the airport and I am like, I got to tell somebody. Like someone needs to know where I am.
In case my organs go missing.
Yeah.
I just need to say this. They drove you over the border? You couldn't have flown
this
to Mexico?
I know. That's no, the part you, I'm
you can. If I were your mother, Casey.
Okay.
So, I'm glad you didn't tell her. She would have had a heart attack.
We're okay, so drive you across the border?
Yeah, that's
so sketchy.
Yeah, that sounds like it's on the up and
up. Here's a fun fact, and this is going to be a really good test of whether my family listens to this podcast. They don't know that I went to Mexico.
Still to this day.
It is a former fat friend exclusive.
Yeah. They know I flew out of state. Which was true. I told them I flew to Texas and I never really lied. Like they never really asked. So anyway,
that's my favorite way to lie.
Hi, mom and dad. I went to Mexico.
Listen, they're so proud of you.
So no, you could have flown in directly to Mexico, but there wasn't an airport really that was any closer. So the town was called, I think it's called Piedras Negras. It's literally right across the border from the Texas border. Like you can see Texas from the hospital that I was at.
Well.
So driving was just, you would have driven that far, whether you flew into Mexico or flew into San Antonio.
Okay, fair.
So yeah, I texted my friend. She immediately called me and she, you know, was really, really kind about it and said, I'm really happy for you. I'm glad you're doing this. I gave the surgeon her number to like call after the surgery to like let her know that everything was okay. And I just said that I hadn't told anyone yet and I would appreciate if she could keep it to herself. And I think she did for a while, which was nice. But yeah, I can remember like sitting in the airport just crying my eyes out. Just I was such a ball of emotion and anxiety. And I don't know, it was just, it was a lot. So I flew into San Antonio, spent the night at a hotel there. I had surgery on the same day as I think four other people. So they picked us up from the hotel lobby. You just instantly connect with these people because you all have this kind of like shared experience of struggling with obesity, and then you're doing this crazy thing. And so you spend 2 hours in the car just getting to know them, and they were awesome and amazing. The facility that I went to was really interesting because it's hospital, surgery center, hotel, all in one. So your first day, you do all of your pre-op testing. So they do blood work, they do an EKG, they do, I think, a chest x-ray, just all of the things to make sure that you're fit for surgery. Mm-hmm. Then you go up to the hotel floor, you get checked into your room, then they do a meet and greet with the surgeon. So everyone who's having surgery the same day as you, you go into this little lobby area, you get to meet with the surgeon, they give you a meal to eat, which was delicious. And then the next day is surgery day.
You got to eat the night before surgery?
Well, not after midnight, but...
Are you kidding me? We've got liquids.
I didn't eat for two weeks before surgery. I'm so jealous.
Amazing. We got real food. And yeah, then the next day is surgery. And so I was actually the last of the group to have surgery. And I was just unbelievably nervous. And so the nurse said, we can give you something to calm your nerves. And I was like, sweet, give me that thing.
Yeah, give me two of them.
Yeah, load me up.
I realized the next day that I had posted on Instagram something that said, high as a kite right now, bye. And I had no memory of it at all.
Wait, does that content still exist?
In my archives somewhere. It sure does.
I'm going to steal your phone and find it. I have to see this.
Yeah, yeah. So they gave me that, and then it was smooth sailing after that. So yeah, I had surgery. The whole surgery took about 30 minutes. I had a really rough first night. I threw up the entire first night. So apparently for some people, what can happen is because they're cutting your stomach, you get residual blood that's in your stomach and your body thinks it's a foreign object. And so it's trying to get rid of it. So I must have thrown up probably 12 times in that first 24 hours. Yeah. It was horrible. Then the next day, they actually took us for facials and massages and to a Mexican market, which is so funny.
Which just like blows my mind because we've talked about this before. I like was in pain. Like I wasn't going anywhere. 10 days post-op, I struggled to walk around a public market. I'm just like floored.
Yeah, I got a nice massage and walked around a little market and had a little fruit smoothie. And...
Did you have to lay on your stomach for that massage?
Yeah. I sure did.
That's mind-blowing to me.
I wasn't in pain, but I was tired.
I could not lay on my stomach. I remember like weeks after surgery going for a massage and being worried, like, am I going to be okay to lay on my stomach?
I don't know. It was, so that was the very next day. And then you go back to the hotel floor, spend the night in the hospital hotel, and then they drive you back to San Antonio. Most people stay one more night and fly out the next day, but I was so worried about getting back to my dogs that I chose to fly the same day, which was a mistake. I needed that extra day. It was a really hard flight home, but I did it. I made it and got back. And I actually remember I wasn't supposed to lift anything heavy. So I asked for help to get my suitcase up into the overhead bin and things like that. But when I got to my car, I was like, oh,
now what?
What do I do? So I had to open up my suitcase, unload all of the stuff from my suitcase little by little into my trunk, and then put my suitcase. And all of this because I chose not to tell anyone and I didn't want to ask anyone for help.
You can tell you're a doctor because that suitcase would have just stayed at the airport parking lot if it were me.
I wouldn't have seen a later suitcase.
Obviously, this is like not something I would advocate or ever suggest anyone else do, but I just want to acknowledge going through the experience of having sleeve surgery and knowing how that takes an incredible amount of strength. I mean, seriously, that's a huge thing to go through by yourself. Don't anyone do that?
Yeah, I would.
That's huge.
I had everyone. I literally told everyone.
I mean, I wouldn't recommend doing it that way. And I think if I had had the foresight to know how things were going to go, I would have absolutely told my family, asked my mom to come with me. Like, it would have made things a lot easier. I think if I'm being honest, and I appreciate you saying that that was a lot of strength, I think it was a lot of fear. It was a conundrum because it was like for the first time in my life, I felt like there was a real solution that I had been looking for forever. And it was right here in front of me. And this was it. And this is what I needed. And I really believed that with my whole heart, but I couldn't shake the feeling that it wasn't going to work. And I couldn't think of anything more shameful or embarrassing than telling people I was doing this huge thing and then not losing any weight and then failing at it. And that was genuinely why I didn't tell anyone.
Do you think any of yours had anything to do with the stigma around weight loss surgery?
Oh, yeah. I didn't want my friends to think that I was so fat that I needed weight loss surgery. And to this day, a lot of them don't know. That's something I've been working on, is being more open and trying to, you know, kind of not keep it such a secret. And my boyfriend has been actually really instrumental in pushing me to be a little bit more open and saying like, hey, this is like part of your story. It's part of who you are and you don't need to like cover it up. And so, but that it's still really hard for me. And I know that sounds so strange because I share my story publicly on social media. Although there are a lot of people there, they feel like my people and like they get it and they understand. And like my friends aren't necessarily going to understand on that same level. So yeah, there was a huge stigma around not wanting people to think I needed weight loss surgery. Like
it's like cutting the tags out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I didn't
want
them
to see this, then they know I'm fat.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So you kind of alluded to this, but how did you begin to find your community and support?
So part of the reason my Instagram account even started was because I wasn't telling anyone. I had this thought that maybe someday I'd want to share this with my family and I would have this like little online journal of my whole experience. And so really that was why I started documenting things, was just to have this like record of what I had done. And then I very quickly found this Instagram community of bariatric patients, and it became, you know, a huge part of my post-op life. One of the first people that I met on Instagram was my friend Elle, and she lives about an hour away from me in Baltimore. And, you know, we would chat back and forth all the time. And I was about 3 months post-op, and she said, hey, we should meet up and have coffee and go walk the dogs. And I was like, this is weird, but like, okay, like that sounds great. So we met up at the Starbucks and we ended up just walking and talking for like 3 hours that day. And it was it was so nice to have someone who had been through what I was going through. And there's so much of this that I think you can't really understand until you go through it. You can hear about it and think about it, but until you're in it, you don't quite get it. And so having her to just talk about things with was incredible. So I just kept sharing on Instagram, kept connecting with people. And then a couple months later, Elle and I went to a meetup event that was hosted by someone else. And it was just another one of those incredible nights of connecting with, it was all women, not that we, you know, don't welcome men into meetups, but it just tends to be more women. So it was all these women who had this shared experience and had been where you had been. And it was just such an incredible, emotional, wonderful night. And Elle and I said, we need to do this. We need more of this. And that's where DMV Bariatric Meetup Group was formed. We just said, this has to exist more. Like, we have to connect to people. And so we started our own meetup group. We host events, not as many as we would like, but probably, you know, 4 or 5 a year. And we just posted on social media. And luckily, people have come and joined our community. And that's how I met Allie and Lisa, was through one of our meetup events. I could have never imagined that it would become what it has become. And I really attribute a lot of my post-op success to having this community and having support. And I just can't imagine doing it without it.
I want to back up for a second because I'm curious when you did tell your family, because they know now.
They do. Yeah. So I told my mom when I was about a month post-op. I drive to Florida every holiday time and I usually spend about a month there. And I was nervous about doing the drive that newly post-op. I knew I was going to need help. So I think I told her I had like been feeling under the weather and I wanted her to fly up and drive down with me. So she flew up. I had lost about 30 pounds at that point, which was noticeable. And so she obviously noticed that I had lost weight. And then we went to lunch and I was barely eating. And I told her like I did this, and she was super supportive. She was so proud of me. She's actually, so as I mentioned, my mom has struggled with her weight her whole life. And I think I have been inspiring to her because she saw how much my life has changed. And so she would always ask me, what are you eating? And I would have to say like, mom, you can't do this if you haven't had bariatric surgery. But when GLP-1s came on the radar, I told my mom, hey, I think you should talk to your doctor about this, because I know, you know, you don't want to have bariatric surgery and that's totally fine, but these are pretty game-changing medications. And so she has been on a GLP-1 for a little over a year and she's lost like 85 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. She's done phenomenal.
That's amazing.
Oh,
that's
so cool. Oh, I got goosebumps.
Me too.
Yeah.
So, okay, you're post-op, you're losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
Are you starting to feel better about your body? Like mentally, where are you?
Oh, yeah. I think that first month was like, okay, I'm really doing it. This was the most weight I've ever lost. I've never lost weight this fast. I can remember getting to 199, and that was huge. Because for so long in my life, I remember thinking, if I could just be under 200 pounds, I would be happy. If I could just get to that, like, under 200, mm-hmm. I would start dating again. I would do all of these things. Like, somehow that was that magic number. And I got there before the end of the year, I think, which is crazy. And yeah, so I lost weight very, very quickly for about 6 months. And then it slowed to a little teeny tiny trickle. And so I always say that I stalled from like month 7 to 10, but I was looking back at my weight log and that's not actually true. Oh. I did lose weight. It was just so slow that it felt like a stall. I lost, you know, 2 pounds a month, 3 pounds a month, like barely anything.
Which when you're 6, 7, 8 months post-op, that can be terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, wait, no, I'm not done yet.
Yeah. So I lost most of the weight by 6 months post-op. And then I lost the last about 15 pounds from 7 to 13 months post-op. And then I stopped losing completely.
I get, so you guys have been really inspiring for me when we talk about like balance. And like, you guys know, this is a thing I struggled with a lot. During those months where you were kind of stalling or just like really had slowed down, were you finding more balance in that time, or were you still really regimented, focused on losing?
No, that's a good point. So when I first had surgery, I was meticulous with tracking. And I think this is huge. I think following the rules for as long as you possibly can is probably the best thing you can do to be successful. And I did that. I weighed and measured and tracked every single thing that went into my mouth. I had alarms set on my phone for water. I had my whole routine of like exactly what I do. It was great. It was not balance in any way at all. And so I think what happened for me was a bit of like post-op timing, being around 6, 7 months post-op, coincided with the start of summer. I was down a lot of weight. I was feeling fantastic. I wanted to get out and be social and do things. I was also able to eat a little bit more because now I'm 7 months post-op. So both of those things happening at the same time, I think whether I intended to or not, sort of forced me to have a little bit more balance, where I did start to scale back a little bit from just being so regimented. And so I think it was sort of a natural transition from like 6 to 13 months post-op of just slowly getting a little bit more balanced and then eventually being in maintenance. And it was not a conscious, all right, I hit this weight, now I'm in maintenance. It was just like, okay, I guess I'm here now.
Looking back now, what do you think? What comes to mind as you like recount this journey with us?
Ooh, I wasn't ready for that one.
It's loaded.
So guys, what I do.
I think for me, one of the biggest lessons that I have learned is that obesity is a disease, and it's a disease that requires treatment. And for my entire life, I beat myself up for not being able to get it together enough to lose the weight and to be a normal weight. And it wasn't until I finally accepted this is a disease. This is a disease that requires treatment, and it will require treatment for the rest of my life to keep it in remission. That was so freeing to me. And it's completely changed my outlook on life, on myself, on the future. It's just completely changed everything for me. And that's, I think, one of the things I hope to do with being on social media is to share that message that there is no shame in needing help, whether it's surgery, medication, whatever it is. This is a disease that needs treatment, and it's okay to ask for help.
I think we all feel like we know you on Instagram. At least before I met you, I did. So it's nice to, I mean, I am learning new things during this conversation.
Same. So. Casey, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know there's a lot of stuff we didn't get to talk about. I know, you know, almost 2.5 years post-op, you've had plastic surgery, you've had a lot going on with dating and a lot happening in maintenance and your social media growing. We'll get to all of that in future episodes, we promise. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week, and you can catch us on Instagram and TikTok at Former Fat Friend Pod.
Yeah, see you guys next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.